And this time we have juniors and seniors from Galt High School. They constitute a civics class there. And we'll start right away, as we always do, with no rehearsal or anything else, except we've planned who's going to ask the first question. So that's you.
Governor Reagan, I'd like to thank you on behalf of Galt High School for asking us to appear here on this televised conference.
Thank you very much.
We now know that you do not plan on running as a third-party ticket with Wallace. Could you elaborate on your future plans in 1976?
Well, yes. I can't give you the details of how we're working it out, but what we're trying to do is find some connections and work out where I can be able to write and to use radio and to get around the country speaking on the philosophy I believe in, and using the experiences of these last 8 years to hopefully correct some of the things that we don't think are properly understood by the people in our whole economic and political system, and talk on that subject. And that's what we're working toward.
Is it possible that you will run for senator in 76?
No, I don't. This job is pretty hard to. I just don't think I'd be interested in that.
What are your views on Proposition 1 in respect to funds being allocated for the new school buildings as opposed to possible double sessions in some schools if Proposition 1 would have failed?
Oh, now, wait a minute. You know, when you say Proposition 1 with me, I go clear back to the Proposition 1 on the tax program that failed, where we wanted to reform it. Proposition 1, now that was the... it passed, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And Proposition 1 out of 17, I mean, you're going to have to refresh my memory.
Okay, here. It stated that if it passed, it would allow more money to build, replace buildings that were not earthquake proof.
That's right, yeah. And what is it, the question goes on in favor of that?
What was your views on it, if it would not have passed and possibly double sessions would have had to come into effect on some schools? Would you be in favor of that, or are you in favor of
it? Oh, I supported it and was in favor of it. I think it's the first priority was to correct this, those schools, or to change them and get the students out of schools that could give us a great tragedy in the event of an earthquake. I say I had out of 17 of them, I had to find out which one we were talking about. No, I don't know what the alternative would have been. There's no question we would have had to move the students out of the schools, and then there would have had to be some doubling up and things that wouldn't have been good for education. No, I'm heartily in favor. Anyone else?
Governor Reagan, continuing on with the proposition, on Proposition 17, were you in favor of that or not? And also, do you think that people were fooled by the wording of that proposition?
I think there was a lot of confusion about it, and I think it was a shame that the thing even was on the ballot when it actually involved a limited locale of the state. And since the entire project is a federal project, and actually if it had passed, it was only could only be advisory to the federal government as to whether to go ahead with the project. No, I was for a no vote on that. We have proposed to the federal government on that dam that they could either choose themselves to build a lower dam, or with the idea that it could be raised in the future, or to go ahead and build the dam they planned to build, but not raise the lake behind that dam above a level, a certain level, until they actually had a demand for the water. Now, as the state grows and as we need more water, one of these days we're going to have no choice. The people are going to have water to drink. If they maintained it, however, at that lower level that we recommended, the water of controversy, the 9 miles of rafting water, would still be there. It's upstream from the dam. It wouldn't be submerged under a lake. And that would be for many years to come. That would be true. But we would also have the ability to generate the power we need. We would have the flood control for the lower part of the river, which desperately needs that. And we'd have the dam built now, and know that we have the capacity for expansion of our water supply in the future. I think that the dam itself can create more rafting water. As a matter of fact, the 9 miles of rafting water that everyone's so concerned about is as the result of a dam. It's not the result of a natural river. You have a year-round flow of water because you've got a dam upstream that's releasing that water, making that particular sport possible. But for those reasons, I believe that they should go ahead with the dam.
Presidential election, you accept the role of vice president?
Well, I've said no to that before. It's awfully hard to answer that this far in advance because you don't know what responsibility you might feel or what the circumstances might be in which you might feel it was your duty towards that. My own personal taste would be no. Anybody else?
Governor Reagan, what are your views on consolidation? Could you elaborate on how it might have affected Galt as opposed to Sacramento's views?
Oh, you're talking about the issue of the whole consolidation here. I have to confess, that being a local matter, I didn't pay too much attention to it. And sometimes I wondered why the local community would want to incorporate with with Sacramento myself. But I must confess, I don't have a fixed view on that because it was outside our purview and kind of didn't want to be in a position of ever expressing an opinion on it before the election, so I just didn't pay any attention to it. It was local government.
Do you agree with Ford on the recession?
Well, a recession now has been, it used to be that people just called it hard times, and when times got hard, that's what they called it. A recession now is a technical definition. X number of months that you have no increase in the gross national product and so forth, then it becomes a recession. So I guess there's no choice. But technically, this meets the definition of a recession due to the layoffs and the things that are going on. I think that we have to accept that, and I hope that political pressure will not be put on the president or the government to suddenly start fighting the recession. The recession is a result of fighting inflation. And we have to fight inflation. And in order to do it, there has to be a cooling down of the economy. There's going to be a temporary period of hard times and unemployment. I think we should do our best to ease that for the people, because you can't level that out equally. Some people get hit harder than others. Just yesterday, representatives of the lumber industry called on me. They're already in a depression. They've had to lay off so many men because of the slump in house building, and there's no market for lumber, and lumber companies have all the lumber they need for the present demand, so the men who cut down the trees, they're out of work. But you do all you can to ease the pain to those who suffer the most. But we're not going to lick inflation if we don't have it. And if we don't lick inflation, down the road, sooner or later, we're going to have catastrophe. This whole system of ours. So, but you watch. You'll see some people beginning to put the heat on government that, oh, forget inflation and cure the recession. Well, the only way you cure the recession is to go right back to more inflation. And then you'd have the whole business to do over again. The tragedy is, back, you remember in 1970, 71, we had what was called a recession then. And sure enough, the political pressure built up to where they had to deal with that. Now, that had resulted from a very intelligent fight against inflation, and they were winning the fight. Inflation had gone from 6.1% down to 2.8%. And at that point, when they said, oh, no, you've got to do something about the recession, and now we have it all to do over again, and it'll be harder this time, and it'll be harder the next time if we don't stick with it and lick it.
Mr. Bilden, you're saying that things are going to get worse before they get better.
Or at least stay as bad for a while. Yes. I think there are many things that could be done. First of all, the president himself has announced plans for extending extending unemployment insurance, things of that kind, to ease the problem for those who are unemployed. But there are things that I think industry and labor, if they would cooperate, could do. Suppose there's an industry faced with layoffs, some of the personnel. Well, if labor would cooperate in industry and they would go to management and say, look, suppose instead of laying somebody off, and so some of us are here full-time and others are out without a job entirely, we'll make a deal with you in which you don't lay anyone off, but we all work less time. We all get a lower wage because we don't work a full week. Now, this has been done. There's a precedent for it. When Studebaker was having trouble staying in business in South Bend, Indiana, and was faced with a layoff several years ago, the labor union itself went to the management and made this offer and said, we'll all work part-time and all take a cut from only working part of the time. But in that way, you won't have to lay anyone off. And it worked very well. And things of this kind, I don't think we've begun to explore all the things that we could do in this fight for inflation to help each other. The way we would marshal and get together if we were in a war, an emergency of that kind, the way people help each other when there's a catastrophe of some kind. I think we could do it, but it has to be done, because runaway inflation, when I was a small child and after World War I, Germany had such a situation. And until you have seen inflation of that kind, you can't imagine that our system, that it could happen to any nation. But they got to the place where they used to turn their workers loose two or three times a day and pay them two or three times a day, pay them what they'd earned up to that point, so they could rush out and buy something before the prices went up in the next few hours. And it finally reached the place that they literally carried their money in a basket. As a boy, I remember I had a souvenir that someone from Germany brought me. And it was a $50 billion mark note in one piece of paper. And for that, you couldn't buy a package of gum. That's how worthless their money became. And it can happen. We don't have the willpower to tighten our belts and say, let's lick this.
What would you say can be done on a state level to combat inflation?
Well, some of it we've already done. On the state level, one thing you can do is, to curb inflation, the main thing is you have to lower government spending. And all of the governments are so tied in today, federal, state, and local, and with sharing grants and matching grants, where you have a program and the federal government pays so much, but you put up so much. Everything that government can do to practice economy and reduce the government spending is going to be a help in inflation. Inflation comes from one cause and one only. Labor isn't to blame. Management isn't to blame. They all get involved, and they're part of the disease after you catch it. But it comes from government spending more money than government takes in. The federal government's deficit spending is the cause of inflation. Because when they go into the market with those bonds and spend more than they take in, then they print more money. Now, if everybody in the world tomorrow suddenly had twice as much money in their pockets as they have today, the first people into the store might profit from it. They could buy something real quick. But as quickly as it was realized that there was that much more money, the prices would simply double. That's what inflation is. It's too few goods chasing too much money chasing too few goods. So you've not only got to do this, but you also have to bring the production up.
How do you feel about the recent devaluation of the Israeli dollar?
Well, devaluation, of course, we've done it ourselves. It has to come when you find that your money is valued in the international market out of line with other people's money. Now, when we devalued ours, it was because we were taking a licking out there on the foreign market. They devalued their money, and thus they were able to export their products and sell them for apparently a cheaper price than ours, and it wasn't really fair because our dollar wasn't worth that much purchasing power. So we devalued. we're back in competition with them. And I imagine Israel faced the same problem. Now, wait a minute. I better get someone up we haven't asked before. Well, now, I was an economics major back in the Depression. And I can remember in our economics class in college, we used to sit around and talk about books that we were supposed to read on economics. And the authors of those books were men who had predicted 24 hours before the stock market crashed that they saw no reason why stock prices should not continue to go up indefinitely. I tell you that as an indication of why no one should make predictions. First of all, I don't think it's possible that you could have, remember the Depression was worldwide, and today inflation is worldwide. It's possible that you could have a catastrophic economic crisis such as we had in 1929, but I tend very much not to believe it, and I know most economists don't believe it, because we have things today we didn't have then. We have some built-in safeguards that didn't exist at that time. We didn't have a Securities Exchange Commission that was keeping an eye on the stock market. We didn't have a number of other things. We didn't have built-in unemployment insurance and things of that kind. When a man was out of a job, that was it. He was out of work and out of money. So I think that it's very unlikely. I think we can have even better than recession. I think the name they've coined now of stagflation is more appropriate. Most economic experts believe that we're going to have several months of this stagflation, and then on about mid-year next year, the market's going to begin to move again, because right now we have a great many businesses with a big inventory. In other words, like the lumber thing that I mentioned. They're not cutting trees because the lumber companies have got all the lumber they need. But as they continue to sell this off, several months from now, there suddenly is going to be a need, and they're going to say, hey, quick, start sending us lumber. Same is true of automobiles. It's true of merchandise in stores today, of refrigerators and ranges and TV sets and everything else. I think most of them believe there will be an upturn beginning along about the middle of 1975. And I happen to think the same. Well, I don't know just exactly what his policies are going to be. Worse in California, I don't believe so. We have, normally in California, a higher unemployment rate than the rest of the nation. But most people don't understand that does not mean that we're having worse business cycle here. We just happen to have in California a bigger percentage of people, number one, who come here to retire. And many of them are considered unemployed because they would like to only partially retire. They have retirement income, but they'd like to also have additional work. Well, technically, they're called unemployed. And also, because of our growth, because of our in-migration, we have a higher unemployment rate and have had for years and years, because you've got a higher percentage of people who come here and then are here for a period of time before they get a job looking for work. No, I would think since California is large in the food business, we're the biggest agricultural state. We've about 40% of the vegetables and fruits and nuts that go on all the tables of America come from California. And there's one thing in a deflation, in a depression or anything else, people have to eat. No, I don't think we would be hit as hard. We don't have as much heavy industry as some of the other states. I would think that industrial states, automobile manufacturing, that sort of thing, would have a heavier jolt than we would.
Yes, Governor. Now, as you know, the recent election, what many Democrats concede for nationwide, how do you feel this will affect the country?
Well, since I'm in disagreement with their philosophy, I've been very interested to note that many of their own people, like Senator Humphrey and all, have cautioned their own party and against taking this as a mandate. In other words, that the people did not necessarily put them in the office because they suddenly believed in their particular philosophy and that they should be careful. And I think they should. The truth of the matter is, as the analyses begin to come out now, the number of votes, we find that what really happened, and it's kind of disgraceful, what really happened was that most of the people stayed home. They didn't vote. And more Republicans stayed home than Democrats stayed home. I can give you some examples, some of the figures that are just coming to light in two congressional races in the Midwest. Both of them happened to be races that were reruns. The Republicans were defeated in each race. But 2 years ago, the same man who defeated them was their opponent. And this time he won, and they lost. But the amazing thing is that the winner this time had less votes than he had when he was the loser 2 years ago. That many people stayed home. One race in Iowa, for example, the Republican congressman who this time was challenged and lost had 32,000 fewer votes. And yet the man that he had beaten 2 years ago had 8,000 fewer votes than he did 2 years ago. So that didn't mean that they had suddenly switched from one party to the other. It simply meant that people just didn't come out and vote. And that's wrong. Don't get caught in that trap. There's only one way to have decent government, and that's for people to vote. And make sure you've got a voice in government.
Governor, do you think that Lieutenant Governor Reinecke's resignation had anything to do with the switch from Democratic vote to Republican?
No, because I say I don't think there was a switch. There's no question about his popularity as a candidate. Whether he could have succeeded in getting more votes out or not, we'll never know.
Votes on the Republican Party, though, the last phase of the administration?
Well, I think that this is part of what kept the Republicans home, and as well as the Democrats. I think there was a resentment of government, a kind of a turning off, and people saying we don't want any part of it. And this is what I meant a moment ago, that it's so foolish. There just isn't any way that you can turn off government. There's no place on the ballot where you can say, I don't want either of them. You have to vote for one or the other. If you stay home, you're letting somebody else decide who's going to run your life for you. But I think there's no question there's a resentment over Watergate and a resentment of what they think was an attitude on the part of all government and politics. Well, I think it was you back there, and then we'll come back.
Yeah, I want to come back to California now. What are your feelings about the farm labor union, with the farmers in mind?
Well, for about 8 years now, I have advocated and proposed one answer to this whole situation. Now, I was a labor union official for about 25 years. At least I was an officer, I mean, in my own union, Screen Actors Guild. So I believe in labor. But I also believe that organizing labor begins with the workers themselves having the right to vote by secret ballot as to whether they want a union, and if so, which union, and whether they want to start a new one of their own. And a few years ago, I made an offer at the height of all the trouble down in the valley that the State Conciliation Service would offer its services, and we would enlist, as a matter of fact, we offered to enlist the aid of the Ministerial Association to help in such a secret ballot and allow the workers, farm workers, to vote. The growers were for it. The farm workers, most of them, were for it. The only opposition at that time was the Cesar Chavez Union that refused. And since that time, we've never come any closer to getting this right of the workers to vote. But if they decide that they do want a union to represent them, make their choice of what the union should be, Democratic. But come 76, you might find the people blaming both of them for what's wrong, if something's wrong. But I hope and pray that it won't, that between them they will take the actions that are needed and resolve that, and then we'll have a normal election based on what say and how many people agree with it. Did you ever hear him in a debate?
Do you feel that he was accomplished everything that he set out to do when he first took office as governor?
Oh, not everything. As well as you did, I think we certainly tried to keep every promise we made. I think the biggest failure was Proposition 1, not the last one, the one earlier, the special election, which would have been a tax reform setting a limit on the percentage of your earnings that the government could take in taxes. We didn't get it in California, but we sure sparked an idea across the country because several other states are probably going to have it. They have, in fact, they sent for all our information on it and in some cases asked us to send people to explain it to them. And some other states are going ahead with it. Even some congressmen are introducing similar provisions at the federal level. So I think it was an idea whose time had come, and we just didn't sell it well enough in California to get it. That is one that I will regret very much, but the welfare reforms, the curbing of the growth and the size of government was growing the number of state employees 2.5 times as fast as the increase in population. And after our 8 years, there are still just about the same number of people there were 8 years ago. We've had great growth and increase in workload, but doing it with the same number of people. We have increased and brought closer to the 50-50 level the sharing of state support for schools. It was only about a third before. All in all, I think we've done pretty well at keeping most of the promises we made, and those that we didn't, we tried, and couldn't get them through the legislature. There, I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, we seem to be pretty good on foreign affairs, so I got some questions.
All right.
Do you think we're paying too much money for the oil we're getting out of the Middle East?
Oh, we're certainly paying more money than it costs to produce it, yes.
Right. Are we still supplying foreign aid to those countries?
I couldn't answer that. I don't know whether we are or not, and I know what your answer would be. It's in reality, it's a kind of a standoff. Each one of us with a gun to the other fellow's head, if we are.
But
we have to have the oil too. Our answer to that is to increase domestic production. And some years ago, I think we made a government mistake back in the administration of Harry Truman. But we deliberately encouraged, and this was part of our foreign aid, we deliberately encouraged through tax policies the oil industry to go abroad and find oil rather than finding it here at home. And this, of course, helped those developing nations by giving them an industry and a business. I think maybe that was right at that time, but I don't think we should have then made it so attractive that we actually reduced down our production here. Now, we have oil to be found here. It's off our shores. Offshore drilling, there's a greater pool of untapped oil out there than they have in the whole continental United States. I think it was a mistake to delay for several years the okaying of the Alaska pipeline. Now, we'll still be several years before we get the oil through that pipeline before it's built and we get it. But that's the answer to bringing the price down, and then supply and demand. They found themselves in a monopoly position. If they could squeeze our nose and twist it, and there wasn't much we could do about it.
Well, it's a big oil company's holding back half the oil in the U.S., right?
No, I think there's talk like that that can't be proven. I don't think there was any reason for the oil companies to do this, and I don't believe the theory that this shortage was deliberately created. We have known since, the first governmental study on an energy crisis was made back in about 1947, and they predicted that in the early 1970s we would be having an energy shortage in this country. Maybe this was one of the reasons why in 51 or 2 they encouraged the drilling for oil abroad. But again, in the 1960s, there was another study, and there was a warning given to the oil companies that we were increasing our consumption of fuel faster than we were increasing the supply. Long before the oil crunch came, we had a seminar among the governors that 50 governors in which we studied this, and we're shown a display that we were on our way to a crunch, and we're on our way again. The fact that the oil stations are open again doesn't mean that we've licked the problem long range. We still are going to have to be careful and conserve, and we're still going to have to find more supplies.
Well, remember a while back, Jack was closed and everything. At that period, we were exporting, you know, a lot of oil more than we were a year before when we didn't have it in the crisis.
Well,
a lot of money now.
No, as a matter of fact, it hasn't all been that profitable. They'd rather be open and selling as much oil instead of telling you to drive your car slower and not as much and save. Yes, we have some arrangements with other countries, and it gets pretty complicated. For example, we don't have all the refining capacity in this country. If we had the crude oil here, we couldn't refine it any faster than we refine it. Now, we get some of our products refined in other countries, and it comes back to us. And there's a kind of a mutual exchange of where we do some things for them and they do some things for us. Europe, for example, has literally no oil of its own. And so they're dependent on it. But they refine oil, and they refine many of the products that we then import. But we have to deliver the crude to them before it can come back to us.
Pretty accurate to say that all the oil we got in the United States is saving when the real oil crisis hit.
No, we have a reserve here for the military, for the Navy, the Elk Hills thing. And there's controversy over this. Some of us have said, open it up and start using it now. But the thing is, we made it so advantageous to go abroad that it was cheaper to buy oil and ship it all the way to America than it was to drill for it and bring it out of the ground here. Now that the price has gone up, it now is economically possible to bring that oil up and to drill offshore, which costs more than drilling on land. You had your hand up.
No,
I thought you did. Yeah. Well, I think he's wrong. He's very definitely wrong, and I hope he'll change his mind. For 40 years, they've been trying to build a governor's residence in California. For 40 years, it's been a political football. Every time a governor, in fact, Governor-elect Brown's father, had plans for a new residence, bigger than the one we're building, incidentally. And it would have been built right across the street from the Capitol here. And again, they turn the heat on them, and they say, oh, the governor's building this for himself to live in. Well, then politically, it gets untenable. A man is put in a position of looking like he wants to live in some home. And finally, we had the same experience when our administration first started. And that wasn't even government. That was some people that wanted to put up the money and build a residence and make it a gift to the state. And the political heat got so great that I finally told them to drop it. It was embarrassing. Then I figured out that there was only one way we were ever going to do it, and that is if a governor on the way out would build it for the governors yet to come. And I feel that we should go ahead. It'll be there for governors for 100 years. You have to prepare for whatever size family these governors might have, so it's more bedrooms, for example, than my family would require, but we've also had governors with several children, so you have to kind of someplace in between provide for that. And I think we should go ahead. There's entertainment that is required by this job, the reception of heads of state, and visitors from other countries and so forth, things that you wouldn't normally do in your own life, but that you have to be able to do in that position. And this is a nice residence. It has provision for being able to treat with that kind of entertaining. But it actually has 4,000 square feet less than the old mansion did down here, the one that's now an historical monument. So I think we should go ahead with it, and I hope that he'll change his mind. His mother hopes he'll change his mind, too. She said so. Well, I've been critical of the previous administration because they did get us into a position of spending more than we were taking in. It had to be In a conversation I had with him in the first of the briefing sessions for an orderly takeover, he expressed himself to me as one who believed in holding the line and not being extravagant. And so I accept his word.
The fact that when you took over the office of the governor, there was a several million dollar deficit. Now as you're leaving, there is a several million dollar surplus. Do you feel that the surplus will be depleted with the new administration coming in, and if so, how long will it last?
Well, the state was spending $1 million a day more than it was taking in each day when we started. The surplus this time is $419 million and a balanced budget. I know that Governor-elect Brown has expressed himself as well aware of the fact that if you spend that surplus on ongoing programs, then you automatically have let the people in for a tax increase. He knows that and does not want to do that. He's told me that. What I mean is that if you start a new government program because you've got a surplus, well, that's a one-time surplus sitting over here. The next year, when that's gone, and the second year of the program comes along, you have to have a tax increase to pay for the second year and the third year and so on down the line. Well, he's well aware of that. Your problem really comes from the legislature. Somehow, a Frenchman named Bastiat many years ago, 100 years ago, said that public funds seemingly belong to no one, and the temptation for politicians to bestow them on someone is irresistible. Now, we've had that experience with the legislature. They represent various districts. The legislator wants to bring home to his district some particular project, program, and then another legislator over here, and pretty soon, in return for support for this one's cause, why he says, I'll support your cause. And the result is, I have vetoed, in these 8 years, over $15 billion in proposed spending measures. That's how much more we could have spent. Have you passed it? But as I say, the governor-elect has told me that he feels the same way about it. Right now, with the tenuous situation of the economy and not knowing whether we might have problems or not, I would suggest that surplus should stay right where it is in the event of an emergency. Because then it is right to use it if you have a temporary economic slump and you need the money. The time for one quick one, he says there's only 1 minute left there. Well, he was up here. You want to yield to her? All right. Well, that has to be decided with the people because it's in the Constitution. But I have to tell you, I'm against it. I'll support the right of the people to vote on it. But when I vote, I'm afraid I'll vote no, because I think maybe we ought to wait until we're even older than we have to be now. Well, that ends our program today. Now, I should have taken your question. What was your question?
I was going to ask if Brown's ideas were the same as yours on marijuana and
drinking. No, I think we differ on marijuana. He has proposed lightening the penalties and so forth for marijuana. What?
How about the death penalty?
I think that the majority party in the assembly might very well agree with it. I disagree because today we're getting information now from scientists, and the most important and the most impressive thing,
Richard,
is scientists and doctors who formerly were saying that they didn't think marijuana was bad for them. 180-degree turn as they continued their research, and they suddenly find that horrible, for example, brain damage, and it's permanent.
All
brain